for last several years, on Sunday mornings, I have been talking on this book, Opening the Hand of Thought. This is written by my teacher, and I am one of the translators. If my record is correct, this is 74th talk, and I'm still page 58. So I go almost paragraph by paragraph, and there are so many things to talk in this book. This is a Japanese version, the original. This book was written, I think, 1970. That was the year I was ordained. I was still a university student, so almost 40 years ago. So this is a main text I studied, Fat is Dazen. And since then, I have been practicing following this teaching. And so I read this text many times, and I worked on translation of this book. So this is very familiar with me. It's almost like this is my book. I talked on this book during the April 5-day community retreat, and I think I finished until page, the first period, first paragraph of page 58. And I'd like to read two paragraphs today. In this section, he talks about how to practice Zazen practically. First, he explained the posture, and then he explained what is happening in our mind. I mean, this physical posture and breathing and mind. The word cho. cho shin and cho soku and cho shin. Shin is body. Sok is a breath, and Shin is mind. And this Cho sometimes translated as a control, or I usually translate harmonize. Another possible translation is to tune, like a tuning the piano or music instrument, in the way it works most best way. That is what this cho means. So in our this sitting meditation, this posture, body, and breath, we keep this upright posture and breathe through our nose during Zazen. We close our mouth. Breathe as if the air goes through our nose and go down to the abdomen. Of course, air doesn't go such deep. Air goes into lungs, but as if air goes down to our abdomen, that means we breathe abdominally. That means our diaphragm is moving. that is important. So our breath in our zazen should be deep and smooth and quiet without making noise. And another important point is harmonizing or tuning our mind. And about this mind, in the common idea about the meditation, you know, we do something with our mind. But in this Dogen Zenji's tradition, we don't do anything with our mind. You know, that means there are many different approaches in almost each and every tradition or schools in Buddhism. And the Dogen Zenji's approach of this meditation practice is very unique. His practice, his sitting, and he often called this practice sitting. That means the word zazen literally means sitting meditation. Za is sitting and zen is meditation. But Dogen Zenji often called this sitting instead of meditation. That means we don't even meditate. You know, in certain traditions, when they meditate, they count their breath, or they watch the breath, or they use a mantra during meditation to concentrate our mind, or visualization, or contemplate on certain Dharma phrase. But in Dogen Zenji's Zazen, we don't do anything like that. We really just sit without using any of those techniques. That is why this sitting or practice is called Shikan Taza. Means just without doing anything, and Taza is sitting. So Shikan Taza means just sitting without doing anything. So we really just sit without, please.
I was just wondering what the Ta means.
Oh, Ta means nothing. I mean, this Ta makes the word following word strong, so put the strength. Taza means really just sit. Anyway, so sitting is done by our body, meditation is done by our mind, but Dogen Zenji often called this practice as sitting. That means with our mind we don't do anything. Of course, even within Soto Zen tradition, some teachers teach counting breath, and some teachers teach watching breath. Actually, Suzuki Roshi, the founder of San Francisco Zen Center, taught counting breath. And Katagiri Roshi, the founder of Minnesota Zen Meditation Center, teaches watching the breath. But my teacher, Uchiyama Roshi, teach do nothing. And to me, of course, my understanding came from my teacher, but what Dogen Zenji told was do nothing. Anyway, then what is our mind is like if we do nothing about zazen, about mind, or nothing, we do nothing with our mind. What is what is happening within our mind during this sitting is Uchiyama Roshi is discussing After he explained this posture and breathing, and his expression was in English translation, letting go of thought. And this the title of this book, Opening the Hand of Thought, is a very literal translation of the expression Uchiyamarashi uses. In Japanese, that is omoi, or this omoi, shi, or so, both can read omoi in Japanese, very colloquial Japanese. And his expression is omoi no tebanashi. No is like a of. So omoi is thought or thinking. And te literally means hand. And hanas means open or ungrasp. Without, instead of grasping, we ungrasp. So I translate this open, open the hand of thought. This is very literal translation. And I made this translation when I was in Massachusetts. I started to translate one of Uchiyama Roshi's writings, and I don't like the common English expression, letting go of thought. I think meaning the same. Letting go means don't grasp, but let go. But somehow I didn't like it. So I made my own translation, and no one liked it. At that time, I worked with Arthur Braverman, who was one of my friends from Antaiji, and he wrote a book about, what the title of his book, something like Living and Dying in the Zen. This is a, well, I don't have time to explain what is the book. He knew, of course, Japanese. He could translate Japanese text to English. And he didn't like, you know, this strange English expression, opening the hand of thought. He said, that is not English. And I knew that. And after I went back to Kyoto, I worked on translating this text with Tom Wright. That Tom Wright is one of my Dharma brother. And he didn't like it. So when we translate, you know, this book, we try to eliminate all those, all these expressions. But one American woman who practiced at, with Katagiri Roshi at Minnesota Zen Meditation Center was at that time living in Kyoto and came to sit with me. She was the only person who liked this strange English expression. And she asked Tom Wright to leave this expression only one place. And we did. Then the editor of this book, Jisho Wana, who she was also practicing in Minneapolis, she's a professional editor. And she likes this strange English expression, and somehow it became the title of this book. Anyway, that is why this strange English is still alive. I'm not sure if you like this expression or not. But after this book was published, I hear many people liked, you know, this expression than the common English word, letting go of thought. Anyway, this is letting go of thought or opening the hand of thought, please.
I was just wondering how it sounds in Japanese. Is it a strange expression in Japanese or is it...
It's not strange, but it's very unique. Before or beside Uchamuroshi never used such an expression. Of course, omoi is a common word, and tebanasu is a common word, common expression. So both are common Japanese, but if they get together, it's very unique. Please.
What, in your mind, as a translator, what was the distinction between letting go of thought and opening the hand of thought? What was the difference that called for the different and the newer and more unusual expression?
Letting go. I'm not a native English speaker, so I really don't know. But let go is something. How can I say? It's very subtle. Please.
I'm not a native speaker either. For me, like if you hold something, a marker in your hand, and you won't let go, but you have to open the hand. So the opening the hand is before letting go. Letting go is just something apart from you, which is maybe not you, but letting go, opening is just it's a process.
Please.
I think the reason is because he used tebanashi, which is like, as he explained, you don't put tebanashi with omoi normally, so maybe tebanashi is a special word. I mean, there could be another word for letting go, but he used tebanashi, which is tebanashi.
Tebanashi, we can use, you know, tebanasu can mean once we grasp, but we open the hand and open and let this go. So meaning, I think meaning is the same. But tebanas, for example, tebanashi ni suru do tebanashi means keep our hand open. That means we never grasp. In the case of letting go, I think we have to keep, at least once we have to grasp, then ungrasp and let go. So this want to go somehow. And grasp means I try not let this go, but when ungrasp, this just naturally go somewhere. But I think the meaning is not so different. Please.
I think that opening the hand of thought is more poetic.
Yeah, that is what the first American woman said.
Yeah.
And more visual.
Yeah, that's true.
And also, in colloquial American English, we sometimes say, oh, let it go. And we're kind of angry.
Angry? Actually.
Yeah, for something bad happens, and we decide we're not going to think about that, and we just say, let it go.
So let go and has some negative connotation.
It can.
Mm. It can
and
be bad.
I think opening is very gentle. Mm. You know, the word open seems gentle and more accepting. And so I like it.
Good. Please.
It also... add up to what Allison just said. Sometimes when people say letting go, it is actually kind of a way of brushing something off. And, you know, you're sort of apathetic or passive. It's not that you're doing it with intent. You're just sort of actually purposely not paying attention to something.
Whereas so what do you say, indifferent?
Yeah. Whereas opening the hand of thought actually sounds like something that you were doing with intention, to me.
Actually, we don't do anything. Our intention is don't do anything. Anyway.
can I say one more thing? Also, I think sometimes letting go can mean I'm lazy.
Lazy.
I'm just kind of not taking care of things. Mm-hmm. If your house mm-hmm. was a mess, people would say, she's letting everything go.
Means ignore?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Or about a person. Uh-huh. If I don't brush my hair or take care of my clothes, people would say, she's letting herself go. Uh-huh. And that's a bad.
I think another reason I use this strange English expression is when we use a common English expression, people think they know what this means.
Mm-hmm.
But when I use the strange expression, people have to think what this means. That is, as a translator, I want to keep a Japanese flavor. You know, people like Tom Wright want to make it really perfectly understandable English. But I want to keep some Japanese flavor. Then people have to think what this means. That is, I think, another reason. Okay about this expression. So he explained about what happening in our mind during our zazen if we don't control or focus on anything. And he used this expression, opening the hand of thought. We keep our hand open, don't grasp. That means when we think, we grasp this thing using thinking. But when we keep our hand open, it come and go. Even when we sit with this posture facing the wall, there's no object beside the white wall. But still, all different kind of thinking, feeling, emotions, or even daydreaming, right? Images coming and go. And our practice is not eliminate all those things coming and going in our mind. In some tradition, meditation means to eliminate all those thoughts and do really nothing. When no thought, in the condition of no thinking, coming and going, is in some tradition called enlightenment. But in our practice, what we do in our zazen is not eliminating all those thoughts or control the thinking, but we don't grasp and think. So we do neither grasping nor negating or fighting against thinking. What we do is let anything coming and going. We don't grasp anything. We don't control anything. But what we really do is just sit. Keep our posture upright and breathe deeply and smoothly from our abdomen. And keep our eyes open. We don't close our eyes. That means we keep awakening or don't sleep. Please.
A few weeks ago, I talked to a friend of mine who doesn't practice, and I mentioned mm-hmm. this is what we do,
mm-hmm.
is sort of let go mm-hmm. of thinking. And she was sort of scared. She said, it seems to her that would be frightening because she was afraid of what would happen. Like she was afraid, you know, she might do something rash or something, you know, to let go of everything.
I understand that fear.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we really experience, we have fear, you know, to become chaotic. All different kind of, you know, things coming and going. But when we become familiar with sitting, we can be friendly with all those, you know, thought coming and going without order. You know, when we sit like a, one period a day, you know, not so unexpected things happen, you know, our thought coming and going is about our daily experiences, what I should do today, or what I did yesterday, and that was not good, or very good, that kind of thinking about our daily things. But when we sit like a five-day session, you know, we become tired of those, you know, day-to-day things, and they kind of, you know, go. They don't come up so much, but the thought or feelings or emotion even from very long time ago came up. It was there for many years and stay very deep, may come up. Even some experience I had when I was 5 years old or so, and usually I don't remember at all, may come up. So those are, you know, during last precept retreat, I a little bit talk about the teaching of Yogacara, or the commonly called the Buddhist psychology. That is, you know, everything we experience in the past are stored in the deepest layer of our consciousness called Araya. Araya means storehouse. And even, so this is much deeper than our memory. Even with things we don't remember are stored within this deepest layer of our consciousness. And there is another layer of subconsciousness called manas. Sometimes manas is translated into English as ego consciousness. This is eighth, this is seventh, and sixth is our usual thinking mind in our daily lives. And the first five are the consciousness caused by our sense organs, like eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body. And the Yogacara teaching says all the experiences we have in the past are stored within this Araya consciousness. So in the sixth consciousness, we don't remember many of them. But when we these five sense organs encounter certain object, something stored in Araya came up and has some association with what, you know, our sense organs are encountering. And six consciousness think about it. Anyway, so when we are sitting in the Zen, all those thoughts coming and going came from our Araya consciousness. And those we call, not we, but in Yogacara they call this seeds. So seeds come up when we encounter certain things. So depending upon what kind of seeds, that means what kind of experience we had in the past, our observation and perception and judgment or evaluation about a certain object is different depending upon what kind of seed we have. So when we are sitting, all different kind of thought coming and going is from our Araya consciousness. And it seems, you know, there is kind of a separation between person sitting and those thought coming and going. And those thought coming and going become the object of this person thinking. and here is a separation between person sitting and those thought, even though there's no object outside. The things happening in our mind become object, and we sometimes fight against it. We really dislike this, you know, thing, thought or memory from the past. And we have, you know, interaction or different kind of interaction. Sometimes we really love this thought. We thought this is fantastic. For example, sometimes in our Zazen, I think I understand everything Dogen taught. Really. And it's really nice. But somehow I have to let go of thought, so we try to, you know, I try not to grasp what is this understanding. Then after I stand up from Zazen, I forget what I understood. You know, all of those things happening in our sitting. But what we do is really do nothing. Let all those things coming and going, and try not to interact with things happening. If we interact, we have separation, and separation between subject and object. If we see this separation and we do certain interaction within our mind, we stop it. This stop it is like an ungrasp. Something I find, we grasp something and fighting against it or grasping it, we open our hand and return to this sitting posture, breathing and letting go. So those thoughts coming and going are from our consciousness. That is our karma. So what we actually do in our Zazen by letting go of thought is we make determination that we do nothing or we don't take any action based on those thoughts coming and going. So those thoughts are just coming and just going. If we grasp it, this thought becomes my thinking. And I have to say, I think. But when we don't grasp them, those thinking are not my thinking. It is simply happening. It's kind of a strange thing, but please.
I was just wondering, what if you, after Zazen, you write it down while you still remember? Is that okay?
It's okay. I don't write it down, but I sometimes think about, you know, why that thought or feeling came up, and what. And that is very kind of a beneficial thing sometimes. If we do in our Zazen, that is not Zazen. But after we sit, stand up, then we can think about why, what the meaning of that experience during Zazen. That is fine. What are you? Oh, please.
What about being aware of your body during Zazen?
During being aware, I mean, like a pain or itchiness?
It could be a pain, or sometimes I have the feeling that my whole body is unified, and that seems good, you know.
That's okay.
Yeah, but,
we think, or if we evaluate, you know, this is okay, mm-hmm. I mean, this is really good, I feel good, then yeah. That is thinking.
Yeah, that's extra.
And there's some separation between your posture and the path, the thing, the one you are evaluating.
Mm-hmm.
There's that separation.
And pain would cause that also, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So whenever we find we are doing something, we stop it and return to this posture and breathing. please.
I was just going to add sort of a connection with what she was saying, that sometimes when we get involved in a particular thought, if it's slightly unpleasant or slightly discomforting, we tend to, at least I noticed that my muscles start to get very tense, or I notice the tension in my muscles at that particular moment. So it's almost when we let go of thought, we're also letting go of tension in a way.
Yes, when we interact with something become, how can I say, some part of our body become have some tension. So whenever we find that our posture is distorted, or I have some tension, we return to the upright posture. This is most, and release the tension. And also sometimes we become very sleepy. Then we try to wake up. While we are sleepy, we have a dream. And dream is very realistic in other than. I mean, we can dream that I'm sitting without sleeping. I think a few years after I started to practice Zazen, that means I was 23 or 4, I found that, not fine, but I had one experience. I don't know why, somehow we had talking until 3 in the morning, about 3 in the morning, and we woke up about 7, and we went to Zazen Kai. So me and my friend, I think that was still in Tokyo, so I was a student. So we had many things to discuss during during night. So me and my friend went to Zazen with sufficient sleep, and I thought, it's really sleepy, but I sitting upright, try not to sleep, and I knew the person sitting next to me is sleeping, his body is like this. But I thought I'm sitting upright, not sleeping. But after Zazen, he said same thing.
I have a question. In the late afternoon period during the retreat, I was drowsy. And I found that it helped if I kept my eyes more open instead of kind of closing them a little bit and looking down. If I had my eyes more open and looked straight ahead more, that seemed to help. Is it helpful?
Yeah, sometimes it helps. Yeah. Sometimes, if when I'm really sleepy, love my eye like this.
Uh-huh.
With a dog, of course, try not to make noise.
Right.
I think that is okay. Mm-hmm. Please.
I find sleepiness to be harder in some ways to deal with than having a lot of repetitive thoughts, because you can just sort of let the thoughts run themselves out, but with sleepiness, if you don't try to wake up, you're just going to go to sleep, you're just going to dream.
Right.
And opening your eyes, returning to good posture, but this is also very effortful. And it's no longer like not doing anything, it's trying not to fall asleep. And so I feel like that's getting me a little bit away from Zazen too.
Yeah, sitting without doing anything is a lot of work. We have to do a lot of effort not to do anything. That is really strange, but I think that is true. This is not the same as sleeping in a bed. So, we need a lot of effort to practice this doing nothing. doing nothing, I think it's a very special thing. Because without thinking, we do something. But intentionally doing nothing is really something special, I think. Anyway, well, can I go back to my talk, please?
Some people ask me this, and I was curious what you would say about dealing, how you deal with pain, like especially during a session, you know, when your body's really hurting. So then what do you do with that? I mean, how do you deal with that?
Well, unfortunately or fortunately, in my history of Zazen practice, first 2 years or so, whenever I sit in this posture, that means I have pain. So, and yet I was lucky because I started to sit, you know, when I was still young. I started to practice when I was 19. My body was still flexible. So after a few years, pain was not a problem anymore. After that, I could sit without pain for more than 30 years. So, but I have a new kind of practice now. You know, after pain did not was not a problem, next problem or difficulty I had was sleepiness. When I had pain, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't believe, you know, people could sleep with this posture with so much pain. But when, you know, pain was not a problem, I started to sleep. And this sleeping is another very difficult thing to deal with because it's very comfortable. I think there are two kind of sleepiness we experience in our Zazen. One is sleepiness because caused by lack of sufficient sleep. This kind of sleepiness is not so difficult to deal with. That means go to sleep. If you are, you know, living in a monastery during session, you cannot go to bed. But if you, you know, live by yourself and come to sit with a group, then if you are really sleepy because you didn't have sufficient sleep, my advice is go back home and sit, take a nap and return. You know, that is not so difficult. But if we practice, you know, for a long time and also intensively, like a session, even though I have sufficient sleep, still there are sleepiness. And this sleepiness is different from the sleepiness because of lack of sufficient sleep. Do you understand what I mean? So we have to make effort not to sleep. And during, I have that problem, even though I had enough sleep, I was, you know, always sleepy. Once I tried to, you know, put a needle here on the room and what they call, yeah, when I was in such a condition. I tried only once. because I'm in the Dogen Zenji's biography, it said when he was reading books and he became sleepy, he did the same thing with a needle. So I tried to follow his example. Maybe when we are reading books that might work, but during the day it didn't work. Because when I'm really sleepy, I forget about the needle. So I didn't do it again. It really didn't work. But this is really, how can I say, difficult things to deal with, because it's comfortable. I mean, when we had pain or when we had, you know, difficult problem to think, we cannot sleep. So when we are sleepy in that way, that means we are comfortable and peaceful. So when we stay in a quiet, comfortable place without a connection or relationship with others, then we naturally become sleepy. And during this sleepiness, so many things happened. I mean, because, you know, Zazen is not the time to sleep, so I try to not sleep, and yet somehow body want to sleep. So here is a tension. And sometimes we are 99% sleeping, and only 1% try not to sleep. But sometimes, you know, 99% we are awake, but 10% sleepiness. And there are all different situations between these two. And so there's a, how can I say, tension or resistance of sleepy, or want to sleep. My body want to sleep, but my mind don't want to sleep. So there's a fighting here in any condition between all almost black and almost white. There are all different conditions. And during this sleepiness, so many things happening. Sometimes we feel I'm really awake, and all, you know, good thought, lofty thinking came up, and we, interact with that kind of thinking. Sometimes we have really, you know, dream. So I think this is a condition when all so-called makyo, or what is makyo in English?
Sort of hallucination.
Hallucination.
Almost.
All different kind of abnormal...
Abnormal
mental experiences. Something is like an enlightenment experience, and something like very depressed. Delusive, you know, like a condition. Although that kind of things happening within this condition of sleepiness and fighting against sleepiness. So it's really important to know not to know, but to make effort not to sleep. Whenever we find we are drowsiness, we try to keep awake and stop that kind of thing. So to me, that was the second problem after pain. And third problems I had was when, you know, sleepiness was not a problem anymore, I start to think. Thinking become a third problems. And this thinking during the Zen is kind of different from the thinking in our daily lives. When we in our daily life, there are some certain fixed object to think. But in our Zazen, there's no such object, but, you know, that the thought or thinking itself become the object. And we are sitting in the very quiet, peaceful place. We feel we are safe. So all different kind of, you know, fantasy, thinking almost like a fantasy. That means without resistance from reality. Do you know what it means? So during the Zen, when we are thinking, you know, we feel, we could think if, you know, as if, you know, if I do certain things, this entire world completely changed. That kind of things happen. So, important thing to me is not only during Zazen, but even we after quit sitting, finish sitting, I try not to trust what the thought come up in our Zazen. Sometimes I hear, you know, some people think, I had a good idea during Zazen. I don't trust that kind of good idea because of my experience. Anyway, those three, pain, sleepiness, and thinking, the problems I had. And third problems, no, not third, fourth problem I had was clinging to Zazen. You know, when I became free from pain and sleepiness and too much thinking, my Zazen became so comfortable. You know, I feel, you know, so peaceful, and I cling to Zazen, and I often wanted to escape from our day-to-day, you know, busy, noisy, you know, life, and I wanted to sit. That is another problem I had to go through. What was your question? Oh. So when I had pain, pain was a problem, because I was young and my body was still flexible, and I had pain only when I was sitting. So I determined not to do anything but sit with this pain. That was what I did. That means, you know, I sat with pain, and pain is a kind of a helpful to make my mind not going this way or that way. Kind of a, you know, concentrate on there. And after a few years, it gone. So I was lucky, but if you start to practice sitting after you became 40, your body cannot, you know, make change. And so if you, how can I say, ignore the pain, or if you try to sit even if you had, you know, pain, it might be harmful to your body. So you have to negotiate with your body. If the pain is only when you are sitting, I think you can do as I did. That means sit with pain as a friend. But if you have the pain stayed even when you don't sit, you need to do something, or you need to find another way to sit without pain. Okay.
So when you were sitting with the pain, you thought of the pain as your friend because it helped focus your mind on one thing.
Yes, that is one possible
interpretation.
Yes. You know, after 30 years of sitting without pain, I had another phase of my practice, that is sitting with pain again. After, since I became 60, now I have pain, always pain on my knees, both knees, and right now I have pain on my hip. So I try not to sit on the cushion; I sit on the chair. To me, this is a kind of new experience, and I'm kind of exciting. <You know? laughs> I feel I become a beginner again. How to sit, you know, with this kind of aging body that cannot sit as I did for 30 years. It's something new. So somehow I'm trying to negotiate with my body. I don't want to, you know, stop practicing, but somehow I want to continue to practice with pain, without fighting against pain. Fighting or anger and hatred. You know, these pains on my knees and back and hips, I'm pretty sure, you know, came from my long years of Zazen. So those 3 points, both knees and back, is a 3 point that have been, you know, supporting my Zazen. And after 30 or 40 years, it started to, you know, screaming. So I have no way to complain. I'm really grateful to those points, and because of, you know, their patience, now they have pain. So somehow I have to be compassionate with those pain, please.
I just wanted to add, I think sometimes when we, you know, experience our own suffering, our own difficulties, it kind of opens us up to a more compassionate attitude toward other people who are having similar, you know, difficulties.
Yeah, toward other people and toward ourselves also. Yeah, when I could sit without pain, you know, I don't really understand why people have pain. that is not a bodhisattva.
So when you're sitting now and you have pain in your zazen, what do you do in that zazen? How do you relate with that pain while it's happening?
I try to do the same thing, be friendly, not fight against it. Sometimes I move quietly. I think that's okay. Well, it's already 11:10. I didn't even read the text. This often happens. Anyway, I think it's a good, you know, discussion. So I think I didn't waste time.
Maybe.
Okay, please.
Oh, I was going to ask. Mm-hmm. In the book, I read the book a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It says that he gave it the example of pumpkins. When pumpkins are fighting, when they do zazen, they suddenly realize, and then now look, they're connected in the same line. That was the example he gives. Can actually, if you're experiencing pain, can you use this realized experience to say that this is not who I am, for example, and not escape, but maybe find the answer beyond your body? Let's say that just the pain is temporarily, it goes and comes, and can you actually find this through the connection? You can say, well, this is who I am in reality, so this is just temporarily like a cloud, it goes, and so you don't have to be friendly with the cloud, but maybe you just say, well, I don't, it's just a cloud, I'm not even, so I'm more than that, for example. Can you go through that way?
That's fine. I mean, the story of squash is a kind of explanation that we are connected with everything. So even the pain or some difficulty I have is caused within this connection. So this pain is not my personal pain, but this pain has connection with entire world, in a sense. not only my pain on my knees, but for example, my daughter, since she was a baby, had allergy, and when we, you know, try to deal with her allergy, it's not her personal problem, but that was caused by all things happening at that time in Japan, how people live, and fat people eat, and what kind of food are available. Anyway, well, I don't have much time, but you know, when we take a close look at certain problem, difficulty, even a pain, that has connection with something, not only me or my family, but it has connection with almost entire world. So just watching the pain and try to fight against it, I think doesn't work. So what I wanted to say is we need to find a cause of pain, real cause. And we find much broader, how can I say, perspective. Well, I'm not sure this is question. I mean, answer to your question or not. Anything else? Okay, thank you.